Thank you, everyone. So we'll have a session now from Jamie Wu, actuarial analyst at QBE, discussing multiplicative SHAP values, advancing interpretable machine learning in general insurance pricing. So please welcome Jamie.
Okay, thank you, everyone, for coming. I had a soft start a while ago, but I would like to start again. It's a little bit surprising. Now we have quite a full room now. Makes me a little bit more nervous, but yeah. Okay. Thanks for coming to this session as the first session. My name is Jamie and I work at QBE. My background is mostly pricing. I haven't done any evaluation practice and I'm still in my early stage of my career. So I do want to say that if you have any critical thinking or suspicious thinking about what I talked today, I'm very open to have a discussion and happy to continue to grow and learn. So as I have it here, the title of this presentation is called, well, it's quite long. Mainly it's about multiplicative SHAP values. It's kind of a new concept. I think if you come to this session, maybe SHAP value is not 100% new to you, but the word multiplicative might be new. So what I want to talk about today is to bring this new concept to actuarial practice. To be more specific, probably is to bring this interpretable machine learning tool in general insurance pricing context. So I'll talk about the background of this study first. So this is part of my research with this this lab. Just want to call it out. It's called Human-Centered AI Lab. It's with UTS. It's still ongoing research. Yeah, just think it's better if I mention that. So I'll talk about the background of the research first and also the modern actuarial dilemma we all face. And next I will talk about, I know probably most of you have already heard about SHAP, but if you haven't, that's no problem. We will have a very short brief of what SHAP is and why we need SHAP. And then we'll talk about the new concept, what is multiplicative SHAP. Of course, after the dry part, we want to see some real life case study, and that might be the fun part. So this height is really not very friendly to me. I might just use that one. Okay, it's working. So, the background of this research, of course, comes from my passion in machine learning. We know that we have lots of advanced machine learning models in our life. It has been there for quite a long time already. Like the fancy word, like boosting modeling or deep learning, or even if you haven't heard about it like 10 years ago, but at least 5-6 years ago, it's around us, it's there. But in actuarial world, I think we have settled with something like GLM for quite a long time. Then why we haven't moved to the new world? We know that some of the machine learning models deliver superior predictive performance. When we talk about this, it's more about the predicting power and the accuracy. Of course, the computation cost as well. We hope it's fast and it's not too expensive. So we know there are good models there, but we haven't been using it since quite a long time ago. But I think these 2 years is kind of our time to really make the decision. The whole industry have given the answer. Yeah, we want to move on. So I think the main reason is the models, the advanced models are black box. We can't explain it. We know likely the results is good and correct, but we don't know how to prove or how to explain why it is correct. And Australian regulations demand pricing transparency, and our customers need to know why they receive this price. So apparently that's the bottleneck we need to deal with. So that's our gap. So do we want to move on to advanced machine learning if it does give us better performance? Single answer is yes. Then how do we get both performance and transparency? That's where explainable AI, or we call it XAI, plays a role here. I do have a flowchart here, but probably I'm not going to dive into all the boxes, but it's helpful to have a rundown. So for all the modeling practice, for all the prediction work we want to do in our work, we start from data collection. So the data can come from customer external sources or internal sources. Well, the data might sit with our IT system. Then from data, we goes into, I call it machine learning processing. Here we have a word like feature engineering, but what we are more familiar with might be just data manipulation to get our data prepared so that we can fit into the model and start training. And then we do the machine learning model training. We have some results. Then here is where the XAI layer comes in. So we want to explain how we get the results and why the model performs like this. And then so that we can present the results to all the key users. Well, ourselves can be the main users of the product of the XAI, and then like underwriters, regulations, customers, other team members. So from the next section, I'll talk about the theoretical foundation or mathematical foundation. So as I promised, we still need to talk about what SHAP is, just in case you haven't heard about it. So SHAP is short for Shapley Additive Explanations. So why don't we just start from something we are more familiar with? So when we do pricing, we have the premium, and we hope the premium looks like we have a nice base rate, and then we have, for example, age factor or location factor and more. We can just that's apparently multiplicative. That's how we come up with the concept of relativities in our work. If you have already used the SHAP in your work, I call it standard SHAP just to be separated from multiple SHAP, which I will talk about later, then you probably have seen this kind of format of explanation. So the prediction can be broken down into baseline and, say, age effect, location effect, and more. But it's additive. Here, I also just borrowed the two images from the SHAP documentation website. I think originally when I started the research, we don't have this nice website. It's all just on GitHub and like different research papers. But now they have this website to show all the existing studies and results and the packages and sources. It's very useful if you want to have a look at it after this session. So I just borrowed these two images here. So the left one is black box. It's a black box model. So we start from a base rate 0.1, and we have these four features in, and then the model gives us an output as 0.4. That's the modeling part. And now the task is we want to explain how come these four features gives us this output 0.4. Then this is the typical SHAP waterfall chart. We start from the base rate 0.1, and then the first feature comes in, the BMI value. It's not an actual example, but it's going to be transferable. So the BMI value comes in, and then the first effect is 0.1, and it's red, so it's positive. What we do is just we add another 0.1 on top of this base rate 0.1. So after having this feature, we have 0.2. And then another feature comes in, we have another 0.1. Another feature comes in, we have a negative, as in blue, so it's negative, 0.3. And finally, we have this age factor, we have another 0.5. We just add everything together, then we have this 0.4. So all of those values comes from the standard shape value explanation. That's how current shape tool works in real life. But why I have passion for this research is because I start to think about, okay, within one model, our goal is only to identify the relative impact of each factor comparing to the base level. Then what if we have more models? We have different claims cohort in real life. We have different perils. We have different portfolios, etc. So likely we need to deal with different models in our real life. Then across different models, when we need to merge the prediction, how do we do that? Like, how do we bring this explanation into a bigger scope? So that's my passion. So I start to think about, okay, can I make SHAP multiplicative? Like I said, within one model, the goal is usually to identify the relative impact of each factor, which is fine. And then the motivation is there a way that we explain whatever machine learning models multiplicatively? We can probably still use GLM if it's good enough for, say, one peril or one cohort. And then what about we use GBM for another peril? And what about we use GBM with different hyperparameters for different models? And then how we bring everything together? Currently, the standard SHAP only provide additive explanations. And what I'm trying to propose is, ideally, if we have a solution that we work in the log space and then we apply SHAP, and then we can transform it back. So we hope the result looks like this nice format so that we can have a nice read book to implement. From here, I'll talk about some math, but it's going to be very challenging if I want to go through all the math within like 10 minutes. That's another profession. I might need to be a lecturer to do that. So I do have the comprehensive content in my paper that submitted to this session. So it's downloadable from the website. And if you have more interest in the details, you can have a look. So I'll talk about the most important part of the math foundation. So why I think how we can rely on the math foundation to say, okay, we can move on to practice. Do we have the mathematical proofs and what the multiplicative shape value is going to be, going to look like, and how do we calculate, why we can calculate that. That's why we need a mathematical foundation. So, as the first step, we want our problem to be solved, be nicely defined, so we have a proper scope to work with. There's lots of notation happening here, but basically it's just a multiplicative format of equation. And this yi is just, so we have I and j here. I is to tell us which observation we are looking at, and j is to tell us which feature we are looking at or which risk factor we are looking at. So the solution is going to be this phi j thing. We want these as the multiplicative contribution of a feature or of an interactive term of like several features. One example is if we do look at GLM with a log link function, then the so-called multiplicative contribution can be expressed as this format, which is what we are familiar with. Where the beta j is just the coefficient for feature j in a linear predictor. Here I have the GLM example, like to show, okay, xi is the age of the home for the first for the i's observation. It can be whatever, how many years. And then another feature, another feature, another feature. And each risk factor can create a multiplier that adjusts the base premium. I think it's something we are more familiar with in our real life. And then the final premium calculation looks like this nice format. So what we have interest in is all of this phi j or phi by JXIJ. We hope it's in this nice format so we can bring it to this equation. Then the question is, okay, looks like we haven't introduced anything new, right? It's everything up to here. I think it's everything we learned from the uni. Then we have already have everything. Like, how come we have to deal with a new concept called multiple shared value? That's because this is GLM, but we want to use something else. Then for a GBM, how come, like, we can't break it down into this nice format and we don't know what 5J is going to be? So that's the question I want to solve. This is just a mathematical, like, strict defined format of what I said just now. Then there's a long process of the mathematical proofs and theories and etc. The process can be seen, as I said, in the paper. But I do want to point out two important properties that we prove that it holds, so that it can be brought over to our actual context. The first property is called local accuracy, and the format looks like this. We don't need to look into it until we look at the whole mathematical process, but I put it here because I want to point out this highlight part. So if we can prove that, say, taking a predictive model F associated with blah, 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 and then we have this format, if we can prove this, what it means that the product of all rating factors multiplied by the base premium equals the final premium quoted to the policyholder. So this property is going to ensure that we can use multiple shared value in our real life, and we can ensure this can happen. And the second property is called preserving ratios, and it looks like this. Yeah, same. I'm not going to dive into the mathematical form, but I just put it here because I want to show that if this property holds, what it means. It means in insurance pricing, so this will ensure that all the relative impact of the rating factors, for example, like age or location, remains consistent across different combinations of risk factors. This just means it's not random. It's not that we have some collision or we have some we have a model looks like we're using 10 different factors. Then what if we change the order a little bit, change the make a little bit tweaks here and there? Can we replicate the impact? Yes, we can. That's why we need this. So as long as we have these two important properties, then we can safely use this theorem. So it's quite long, but if you break it down, here we just have the log difference of something. Don't worry about the notation. We can look at it when we have a case study. And then here, all the C stuff is just weights. So it's a weight it's just a weight. It comes from the standard shape value theory. So it's not something we created. It's brought over from the standard shape value. And this is the summation format. We take the exponential of it. That's how this long thing look like. But up to here, I just hope that we have the impression for the log difference here. And then we know that it looks like roughly like this format. Then that's it. We're enough to move on. So I recommend that we take this as given, thinking it as a formula to calculate the multiplicative shared value. Here I put lots of contents here, but basically that's just to say that it is useful, and taking that as a formula, we can move on to the fun part. So here we have a home insurance case study. I chose home insurance just because that's the product I'm most familiar with. But I guess as long as you can apply the machine learning in your work, regardless it is pricing work or valuation work, regardless which product is, should be transferable. So the case study set up. Before I talk about the actual example, I do want to have a rundown of the designed algorithm. So how do we calculate multiplicative shared value? Just now we have the formula, which is just the mass, but then what to do? So the first step is we transform the predictions to log space, and then we compute collision effects using log differences. That's why I mentioned log differences just now, across various combination of rating factors. So this whole step is actually something working in progress. So I'm still trying to work out how we can have an algorithm to, from simulation, we can, like using a reasonable computation cost, come up with this step. Because it's still working in progress, so I do have some hypothetical values for us to go through the example. Here is just, it's something very new. So, this is just where I am. And then the third step is apply generalized linear regression with sharply based weights. If you replace this thing, basically, it's just with some weights, then this is something we learned from the uni, I think the econometrics subject. So you will see it very familiar if you have that memory. It's nothing super new. And then the last step is to transform it back to multiplicative contributions. And then we will have the so-called multiplicative shape value. So why is it called multiplicative shape value? Because we apply shape-based ways here. Hope that kind of makes sense. And then if not, let's find it out. Try to figure out from the real life example. So this is just a typical example property. It's just a home. The age of the home is 45 years. And then the construction type is brick. And yes, we do have a security system. And it's kind of near the fire station. Not sure how that helps. And also we have a location risk score here. It's medium. When I say location risk score, I know in real life we may have different natural perils. We have attritional as well. So it can be location like the flood risk score or bushfire or anything. But here we just take it as a location risk score to like universally, or like the general risk score to simplify it. Then the step one is we need a model architecture. So our model may be, okay, we have a GBM for attritional part because we have enough data. And then we have somehow still use the GLM or any other models for the weather-related model component. When I say that, it's mostly just natural perils. Then the total premium can emerge from the baseline premium, which is largely likely the average of the portfolio, and then times the GBM component and times the GLM component. So ideally, we hope the premium looks like this. Then, here comes where I need to make a little bit disclaimer. So these all are hypothetical numbers. So we say if we have a combined pricing model predicts a premium of 726, which is the number I made up, but under some reasonable logics, for this, so this is the price for this specific property, and 600 is the portfolio average. So that's our setup. Then we go through the process. The process is basically the algorithms I talked about just now. So we have the reference baseline premium, which is the portfolio average. And then we have this correlation column here. It's basically just a subset of features. So we have the premium estimate. And then we, like I said, we take the natural log and we work with the log difference. So, for example, it's just from the baseline. So all of the log difference is just whichever collision compared to the baseline what happened. So, for example, this 6.544 is basically if you subtract this number, 148 from this number, you should get this number, the baseline number. So the log difference here is what we need for the next step. So here is what I said. So you see something, see something very similar to the econometrics matrix solving process, if you remember that. But basically, the matrix equation to solve is like this. The Y star contains the log differences we had from previous step. And the X is the design matrix encoding all the feature presents. So which feature presents, which feature doesn't in each collision. And beta just represents the log contribution we need to solve. I have the each and every step in my paper to show how we solve this problem, how we solve this equation. But the solution is listed here. So what we want is just this beta matrix. We have those numbers here, but let's talk about it in a better format here. So this phi star base, like the base phi, is exponential of 0.120, which comes from this beta. So like I said, it's the multiplicative step value is just calculated by exponentiating these coefficients, which transform them back into the log space to a multiplicative contributions. For each and every feature, we can just do the same thing, and then we have the all the phi values here for each and every features. If you want to read which the definition of each feature, I have it here, but it's all our, I think, daily life risk factors, nothing fancy. Then the results looks like this. So the premium decomposition verification is we want to know if we go through the process, do we add up everything to 726, which was my starting point? So this number comes from the baseline times this comes from the feature one collision, this is feature two collision, etc. So this is the format we hope we have in real life. Like I said, it's hypothetical. Why? Because I'm still working on this step. So, but this is what we are working towards. And as I mentioned, I think where we are, we have the math foundation already. It got proved, and we have some beautiful properties that we can bring into our real life. And we also have the methodology and the designed algorithm. It's more of the computer science part I'm still working on, how we can have a package developed so that we can pull from Python or R, and then it can does the job for us. That's where we are. So I think the key takeaways is we want to use more advanced machine learning models, and we have some real life challenges to deal with. We need to explain it to regulations. We need to explain it to our stakeholders. And of course, if a customer complaint comes up, we have to be able to deal with it. Then I want to say there is extended study, like working in progress component in my research. Like I mentioned, the mathematical formulas has been proved. But also I want to say this is there's a paper called it talked about X shape value, which I heavily cited. But everything in there starts from the kernel shape. So if anyone have heard about shape already, you might know that there's a big family of shape values. We have kernel shape, we have tree shape, etc. But the whole thing just got proved from the kernel shape starting point. So for the other shape families, we still need to work on it and see if it's if it holds the same, the property still hold for the other SHAP family members. And the implementation package is not yet developed. That's where we are. So that's a limitation and future study. And as I said, there's a mathematical process listed in the paper. So if you have interest, do have a read, and you can find how the transformation happened and how the multiple contribution calculation is derived, etc. So that's pretty much it. I think it's time for questions.
Sure. All right. Thank you very much, Jamie. That was a very interesting talk. So we've got one question from the floor, but I'd encourage anyone else who has one, please remember to submit them through the app, and we can pass them along to Jamie. So the first question that's come through is, what kinds of evaluation measures do you use for prediction accuracy comparisons? Do ML models really outperform GLMs for tabular claims modeling when you compare them, and to what extent?
This is a good question, but I think the scope of this study is when we do have a better model rather than GLM, and if we decide we want to use it, say, for example, GBM. GBM has been proved to outperform traditional GLMs in many existing studies many years ago. I also cited one of the paper when I did the literature review. So definitely the work has been done, and my work focuses on if we do have a better model and if we want to explain it, how do we do that? Yep.
Okay, so now the questions from the floor, so I'll ask one myself. I have a couple. One I would like to ask out of curiosity is, on your slide a couple of slides back, you had the breakdown showing the beta coefficients. Yeah, the next one. Yeah, what's the interpretation of that base coefficient there, which seems to act as a bit of a balancing item?
Base coefficient.
1.128.
Yeah, sure. So that's also a good question, because the baseline is... Sorry, does it work? Yeah. So the think from the setup, we said that the combined pricing model predicts a premium of 726. So this is the price for this specific property, while the portfolio average is 600. So if you time 600 to the number we saw just now, we should have this 600. Sorry, that's not... let's check. Have it here. So this 600 is the the reference baseline here, and the first, I think your question is this number,
yes.
Right? Or okay. I haven't listed down here, but I can show one example. So, for example, like I said, we have the different components here. We have attritional, and we decide to use a GBM for it, and GLM, we have it for the weather-related model. And the baseline for the whole portfolio, the portfolio average, we take it as the baseline for the combined, like the whole cost. Then when we want to break it down into GBM component and GLM component, this is basically a scaling issue or scaling problem we want to solve. So from this 600, we might want to bring it to another scale, which is the GBM component baseline. And also we can have the GLM baseline as well. So if we have two... If we have the two components broken down, we should have different reference baseline for each and everyone. For this, I think that's the why we have the baseline phi number there is functionality wise is to serve this model breakdown, and when we bring it over together again, it's more about the scale. So imagine if we have it just as if the scale is just one. Sorry. If here we just have 600 times one, then each and every other factors are just represents one coefficient. That works. But also we have this functionality here to apply it to different components. I think for here it doesn't have a specific explanation. It's just a scaling. If we put it as one, we're just saying we strictly start from the baseline of 600. And then for each and every other factors, it represents for each coalition. Yeah, it's more of a design for the other use.
It's very interesting. We've got a few more come through from the floor now, so I think in the order they came through. So what are the current key challenges in your work?
The key challenge in my work? I'm an actuarial analyst. I work through all the actuarial education subjects, but I'm not a computer science expert yet. I did like the research, as I said. I worked with the UTS lab. We have lots of IT or computer science or artificial intelligence experts there. Comparing to them, I have a very, very big gap to their expertise. But we can share and study together. That's the good part. But I do feel the learning curve. So I'm currently just working on myself. Most of work just is done by me. And I can get some advice from my supervisor who has a computer science and artificial intelligence background. However, it's very limited. So the main challenge is actually the computer science part. Still working on it.
Okay. All right. So there's a comment here, though. Feel free to address it. Is that kernel SHAP relies heavily on data permutations. There can be a risk of using unrealistic feature spaces to create the interpretation.
If you don't mind, can I have a read?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Just this one here.
This one?
This one. The one that says comment.
Oh, okay. Yeah, kernel SHAP. Right. It talks about kernel SHAP, which is good because my study comes from, like, the starting point is kernel SHAP. Kernel SHAP relies heavily on data permutations. I'm not sure what that means, but my understanding is we do need to rely on analytical work, like the numerical analysis and lots of simulations to come up with the right coalition for us to work with. Hopefully that's what it means by it relies on the permutation. There can be a risk of using unrealistic feature space to create. Okay, right. So that just means what if we have a very well-performed, highly accurate model? And of course, we can explain it, like theoretically, I mean, using the SHAP, we can break it down. But what if it doesn't tell the same story as what we see in the reality? Say, the... For example, for this one, not sure if anyone from other working environment have seen features for, like, say, for example, sometimes it can be not as intuitive as we thought. Because, for example, if we assume, of course, if we have the security system there, of course, it's going to reduce the risk, right? But what if it doesn't make any difference? Does that make sense? Does that really make sense? And what if we, out from the explanation tools, it can be SHAP, it can be something else. Even for GLM, we have this challenge. Sometimes we have a nice model, we can explain it, but the explanation doesn't make sense to us. I think that just means we probably need to think about that term again, or we probably need to think about, should we bring this feature in? Can we still achieve the same goal without bringing that feature in? Or we can play around having other hyperparameters and see if we have a model that doesn't make sense to us.
And I think we're at time. So there's a couple more questions there, but please, I'm sure Jamie would be happy to take questions after the session. So please join me again in thanking Jamie for a great presentation.